Good morning, everyone, and welcome to More Than Milestones. I'm your host, Dr. Wendy McKenna, and I'm so excited to be able to introduce to you my friend and colleague, Dr. Dan Hansen. Welcome, Dr. Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So today we are going to help you move from bump to birth and beyond to boot your worry, be confident, and have a blast raising your happy baby. And I'm so excited to be able to bring this topic, this really hot topic of tongue ties and lip ties and breastfeeding and how we can navigate this world. So Dr. Dan is going to take us through this from the beginning. So I'm going to have you just go ahead and please introduce yourself and give a little bit about your background and then how you are serving these awesome mamas and babies today.
Okay, thank you. And thanks for having me, by the way.
Absolutely.
So my name's Dan Hansen. I'm based in Australia. I'm from England, as you can probably tell from my accent. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I came across some work with a colleague of mine who was doing some great work on helping moms to establish proper feeding problems, proper feeding patterns, not just with breastfeeding, but also with bottle feeding and for solid feeding and all kinds of other feeding difficulties. And essentially that was a treatment to help to release the tongue and the lip when they're sort of too tight, when the phrenal attachments in there are restricted in some way. And it was amazing. There was this one morning when I went to watch who's now my mentor, Dr. Maijan, work. And there were two mamas that day who neither of them were able to breastfeed their babies for several months. And both of them before my eyes managed to feed their babies on that same morning. And from that moment on, I realized that I really wanted to be involved in that work. Prior to that, I was already working a lot with tongue function on children when they were developing crooked teeth and jaws. The way we swallow and the way we breathe really affects how our muscles posture and how they press onto the jaws and on the teeth. A little bit like a sculptor. So the muscles of the lips, cheeks, and tongues, kind of like a sculptor. And the teeth and jaws are like a big lump of clay. And however that function is working, that affects the form. So it affects how the teeth and jaws come through. And that was my area of work. And I kind of thought I knew it all. And I was working a lot in lecturing and teaching all this stuff to other dentists about how to get children to grow jaws properly so that they could avoid braces and orthodontics and so on. And along came this lady who showed me about how the tongue can be dysfunctioning even before birth. So that's my introduction to all of that stuff.
Wow, that's amazing. And so now you even have a Tongue Tie Institute that you've helped to co-found?
Yeah, so Maijan and I actually went to Maijan and said, really, our profession and other professions need to know more about this. I was almost ashamed that I didn't know about this stuff, having worked in that area for so long prior to that. And I said, we really need to get this out there. And she shares a passion for spreading knowledge like me. So we both formed this thing called Tongue Tie Institute, which is so far has only been operating in Australia, where we have various seminars each year with lots of professions coming. This year we had pediatric surgeons and lots of dentists, body workers like chiropractors, osteopaths, speech pathologists, lactation consultants, midwives, so many other professions there. And we're all sort of sharing that space and talking about what research there is and sharing case studies. And it's a really nice way to share the information.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for doing it because, you know, being a mama and knowing that moms choose early on in their pregnancy whether or not they want to breast or bottle feed, they have these, you know, and if they do want to do the breast, you know, they have these expectations of it's going to be good and it's going to be great. My body can naturally do this, but often that's not the case. And, you know, sometimes it's just a lactation consultant can come in and, you know, change positioning a little bit, but sometimes it goes a little bit further into this thing called a tongue or lip tie. So can you dive a little bit deeper into what exactly a tongue or a lip tie is?
Sure. So around 12 weeks in utero, so 12 weeks since conception, there's tissues in the midline of just underneath here, our lip and underneath the tongue, also some other areas as well, but these two in particular, the tongue and the lip, they're supposed to sort of die away in a process called apoptosis. Mm-hmm. And when they don't die away, we're left with this remnant. And it's actually normal to have a phrenum. Everybody's got one to some description. But if that freedom is perhaps a little bit too short or a little bit too thick or inelastic or attaches in a place that maybe is too close to the tip of the tongue, or even not to the tip of the tongue and it's a little bit below the surface, basically if that tissue is not able to move properly, then the baby doesn't have proper freedom of movement. And there's a few things that are essential to be able to establish proper breastfeeding or bottle feeding function. And that is, you know, we need to be able to create a really good seal so we don't swallow air during feeding, which can lead to then wind and reflux and things like that. Mm-hmm. We need to, once we've created a seal, the tongue needs to be free to then be able to undulate and move properly in a nice wave motion to start that peristaltic wave that then goes down to become the swallow. And when part of the tongue can't do that, that's commonly known as a tongue tie, or in the medical industry, they call it anchioglossia. And lip tie is less spoken about, but certainly in my experience can have a profound effect on the infant's ability to create that seal in particular.
Yeah, I imagine. I know for me, one of the hardest things was to get that lip up and over the top rather than tucked and underneath. You know, I just kept wanting to be tucked, and mine didn't end up having lip ties, but that was definitely like the first thing that I checked was like, make sure that the lips are doing their fish thing so that they can kind of create that seal.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just for breastfeeding as well. As I said, as I briefly mentioned before, it's some mums will come and for whatever reason, they've either made a conscious choice or even they've been forced into making a choice to, or not even a choice, they've been forced to sometimes stop breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And feeding function can still be improved if there is an oral restriction. Working on that, we can work in combination with a lactation consultant, and all of our patients we send to a lactation consultant, and we have also one on site when we're doing the treatment. Mm-hmm. And also we send to a body worker, such as usually a cranial based chiropractor or osteopath, pediatric chiropractor often, to work on all the stuff, because there's so many comorbidities that go on with so many compensations that happen.
Yeah. So it's not just about just going in and releasing it.
No, we call that a drive-through frenectomy.
Okay.
The surgery is called a frenectomy, and mm-hmm. there are places where it's possible to just go and, sometimes it's a quick snip with scissors or a scalpel or whatever, and other times it's even a quick one with a laser. But we really see there's a lot more that can be worked on around that, and it's so important to for these babies and the moms, for the dyad complete, to actually go to work if necessary with a body worker and also the lactation consultant as well.
I think that's so important, because I think that when a diagnosis of a lip or a tongue tie is placed upon a mom, and surgery is one of the things that, you know, they say, oh, what? My baby needs to have surgery. You know, to have some of the questions to ask, you know, how comprehensive are you with, are you just going to do the surgery? Are you following up? What other workers and professionals are going to be part of this? Because I think there are a lot of places that just do the surgery without any of that other comprehensive work.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it more and more, fortunately, the health professions are starting to collaborate more and work together, you know, with integrative centers being set up all over. But it's really important that, yeah, all of those, as many of those other factors that are possible at that time be addressed. And then often there's things that still need addressing later on, you know, when the child is able enough to perhaps take on instructions, where we might do oral myofunctional therapy or various other things that require the child to actually do various exercises to then get over that dysfunction, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. You sent me a blog, which I loved reading. Thank you. And one of the things that it said in it, which really piqued my interest, was the fact that one of the most important jobs that baby has to do is first learn how to breathe when they first come out. But then the next most important job is to be able to coordinate this suck, swallow, breathe reflex and to be able to establish feeding. So can you kind of talk about those first 30 minutes after baby's born and the importance of establishing that rhythm?
Yeah, there was a research paper from the Lancet in the 1990s. I can't remember the exact date, but this research paper was speaking about how various delivery ward routines would affect the ability of the child to develop a proper suckling pattern. And what they looked at was various things that happened during delivery ward routines. So one was whether the baby had separation from the mother's skin, or whether they had skin to skin contact. Another they looked at was whether the mom was sedated, and therefore the theory was that the baby was also partly sedated, but at least the mom was sedated anyway. And they, what they realized was if there was a lack of skin to skin contact combined with sedation, that was the sort of the worst outcome for getting, and no babies actually had a functional suckling pattern in that scenario. I think there was one or two that actually managed to suckle, but it was deemed as not functional. Then the best scenario was, of course, skin to skin with no sedation. And we think about maybe a lamb in a field being born, that the lamb just naturally makes its way onto its mother's teat in order to feed. And this is what this sort of saying was happening, is we were sort of suppressing that natural innate reflex to be able to feed. And of course, sometimes sedation is necessary, otherwise it's going to be an absolute nightmare of a birth. And so it's not, the paper wasn't sort of saying we should or shouldn't be doing certain things, but it was saying that when perhaps an elective decision is made, it's really useful for families to be empowered as to what the potential implications are of that decision, as opposed to just making it and not realizing that these things could be a factor. And it went on then to say, just to finish, it went on to say that if the baby didn't manage to create a proper suckling pattern within the first 2 hours of birth, then that went on to then become a dysfunctional, mature sucking pattern or feeding pattern, swallowing pattern, sorry, later on in life. And as I mentioned before, that then leads to crooked teeth and malocclusion and everything else. So it's there's really a massive domino effect that happens potentially from that first 20 minutes postpartum.
That's pretty incredible, because again, when we think about, you know, our baby feeding right now and whether or not there's, you know, dysfunction in, you know, lip or tongue ties and other things, that it's a problem of the right now, you know, and you do what you can to fix it right now, but there's not necessarily like future consequences. But you're saying there's absolutely a cascade.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So can you kind of go into that a little bit more about, you know, what that cascade might look like?
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, if there's low tongue posture, which happens from, if there's a tongue restriction, most likely there's a natural resting low tongue posture. So instead of the tongue resting sort of forwards and upwards in the palate, it'll be resting in the floor of the mouth. So that has an effect on how the top jaw is gross. So we want pressure in the roof of the mouth to sort of do this to the palate. And when the tongue is not doing that, we have a smaller top jaw. Also, low tongue posture is related to mouth breathing. So I don't know if any of the people watching now want to just try this themselves. If you try and put your tongue in the roof of your mouth and try and breathe through your mouth, you will find that you can't get any air past your tongue because it blocks your airway. So tongue in the roof of the mouth is neurologically linked with nose breathing. And we want to nose breathe for so many reasons. The nose warms, filters, humidifies the air. It's kind of like an air conditioner. We get to mix. There's this amazing gas called nitric oxide formed in the sinuses, and the air mixes with that, and that opens up our airways and blood vessels, and it's antibacterial, and there's so many things to, and also the nose helps to keep us a nice balance between oxygen and carbon dioxide levels as well. It gets kind of complex, but when we nose breathe, we breathe a more appropriate volume of air because the nose offers resistance to air. So there's this cascade effect where we get this small top jaw that forms. And also when the tongue is not able to swallow properly, we tend to use the lips or the cheeks more on the swallow. And so we call that a reverse swallow or a mentalis swallow. This is the mentalis muscle. And when this kind of pushes back, that then creates an overbite. So it's this lower lip that's pushing the jaw back. Or not so much pushing the jaw back, but limiting its forwards growth.
It's forward growth, right.
Yeah. And this then creates this, what we call in the medical world or the dental world, the retrognathic jaw, or a jaw that's kind of recessed. Mm-hmm. And all of the research with snoring and sleep apnea and so on is now telling us that a small top jaw and a recessed bottom jaw, which are both functions of not just tongue ties, but uses of buccals and dummies and or dysfunctional swallowing, mm-hmm. all of this stuff then is showing us in research that it's linked to snoring and sleep apnea. And that's linked to heart disease and, you know, everything else.
Everything else. Right. So, if you can't sleep well, if you can't breathe.
Yeah, exactly. So poor sleep, if children aren't getting good sleep, they're not getting REM sleep, and mm-hmm. REM sleep's required for short-term memory. And if we haven't got good short-term memory, we can't pass our exams in school, and we get maybe diagnosed sometimes incorrectly with, you know, attention deficit and things like that. So, you know, yeah, sleep, breathing is central to so many things, including anxiety and depression and just general functioning of the body. And we haven't even gone into postural stuff, which is more kind of your area of work, you know, and basically the jaw or the head will posture naturally to try and keep the airway open when the airway's narrow.
Yeah.
And that then, you know, we kind of get a pain in the back of the neck and hip problems and feet problems and all the rest that goes along with that cascade effect. So everything's connected. It's like a spider's web. You touch one part of a spider's web and the whole thing kind of
wobbles. You know? No, yeah. I think that's so important for people to understand that, like, when there's something going on in one area, it affects everything else. It's not just about fix this. This is a problem. It's the whole body. And, you know, it's just so important to see how one thing leads to the next, and understanding that the first few months and the first year and the first few years of life are the foundation for everything that is to come. So the more we can empower ourselves with this kind of knowledge and understand how it all comes about, the better. So, you know, I think that we all just think when we're having kids, it's like, okay, well, we know at some point we're going to have to go to the orthodontist, you know, but it doesn't have to be a foregone conclusion is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. It's kind of like a rite of passage, isn't it? It's like,
Did you get your braces yet?
You know, there may be some scenarios now, because I mean, I don't know how deep we can go with this, but there's a thing called epigenetics where various tendencies towards various problems can be passed down through the generations. And it's basically epigenetics is a function of how the environment affects the genome's ability to express itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there are some, I think that there were sort of several generations down this path of dysfunction, which probably came about around about the Industrial Revolution when basically lifestyles and sedentary behaviors became more of a thing. As opposed to agriculture and working in the fields and getting fresh air and move, playing and growing, which is kind of your thing.
Yeah, it's exactly the company name.
Exactly. So, you know, when all that started to happen, potentially we're having some of this dysfunction passed down. The really cool thing about epigenetics is we reckon it's sort of slightly reversible, but you'd have to really focus on that for several generations potentially to have a major impact. So that there may be some children there are some children who are more prone to these problems now. Mm-hmm. But we can work on them either by trying to get their function as good as possible during feeding as an infant, or if that's not possible or it's too late for that or whatever, age 5 or 6, we can do so many things to help change the way all of this is functioning, all these muscles around here. With various, as I mentioned before, oral myofunctional therapy or breathing retraining and all kinds of different things, as well as doing all of the other things like the actual inputs to the system, like moving your body and eating healthily and, mm-hmm. You know, setting up the body to be able to heal if necessary, those sorts of things.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. And I was just thinking about asking one other thing, and I lost my train of thought a bit. Breastfeeding versus bottle feeding. I know we talked a little bit about this off camera beforehand, but you know, a lot of mamas want to breastfeed and sometimes it's just not possible. And so we know that that's best for baby for lots of reasons, but we were talking a little bit about helping baby be a more functional bottle feeder. And I don't know if it's the type of nipple or bottle that you use, but I know that you were mentioning something else about the interaction that you have with baby. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. There's a research paper. I think it was out of China. They were looking at the various different outcomes relating to how the baby was fed. And they split them up into various groups like we do in science. And there was one group that had breastfeeding as well as interaction with the mother during feeding. So that essentially meant good skin-to-skin contact, and also talking to the baby and interacting with the baby, and whether it was singing to them or talking to them and those sorts of things. That was the most favorable group. And then they had another group where the babies were, so the least favorable group was bottle feeding without interaction. Uh-huh. The positive thing for mums out there who are bottle feeding for whatever reason, if they're able to interact with their baby, to talk to them and to give them skin to skin contact and give the baby all of those things that it wants and needs. This paper went on to basically say that it would suffer less with internalizing problems when it was older, looking at age 6, which basically means anxiety and depression.
Right.
So there's this bonding aspect of feeding itself, and so yes, mother's milk is you know, and the actual act of breastfeeding has an additional effect, but some of that bonding can still happen with a bottle.
Yeah.
Which is great, because no one's perfect, and we're not in an ideal world where no one has to go to work anymore and no one has any medical problems. And, you know, it's kind of, we are in the situation we're in. And I genuinely believe that all parents do the best that they can given their circumstances. I've never met a parent who doesn't. So until I meet one, that's kind of what I'm going to think.
I'm with you there. We are all definitely doing the best we can, for sure. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
With regards to, you mentioned about the bottle, though, just about, yeah. So when you do put a bottle in the mouth, it's always going to activate the cheek muscles, which we don't want, and it's going to affect the way the tongue lifts, and same with a pacifier or a pacifier or dummy. So it's, when possible, the idea is to try and use these things either not at all or as little as possible. But so there's various companies who have made various different teats to try and improve function.
Yep.
And many mums will ask me, they'll say, well, you know, is this all it's cracked up to be? And my answer is, I don't think it is all it's cracked up to be. There are some things that are probably designed to maybe improve things slightly, and maybe improve the tongue to elevate and so on. But the reality is, you're always going to activate these compensatory muscles when you put that foreign object in there, as opposed to a nipple, which is very compressible and you know, elongates when it's inside the mouth and things like that.
Yeah.
But you know, we all do the best that we can, and the great thing is, as I said before, you can be interactive with your baby, and then when they, you know, you can do all the things that you do and give them plenty of tummy time and do all the rest of the, you know, get them outside and play with them and interact and have a healthy, happy baby, you know?
Yes. Oh yeah. No, it's great. So thank you. Thank you for kind of assuaging some of those anxieties of mamas who can't always breastfeed. I did want to ask you about also, noises during breathing or babies who snore. Is that ever normal?
A mentor of mine once said to me, always remember never to use the words always and never.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I say the same thing every day.
Yeah, so I don't want to say, it's never normal, but noisy breathing is usually a function of some kind of dysfunction. So it's basically, it could be like a hyperventilatory breathing pattern where the speed of the air going through the airways is greater. That creates turbulence, a bit like when a plane takes off, air loses pressure. So the faster the air moves through the airways, more pressure is lost, there's turbulence, and that usually creates some kind of a noise or a sound. So often that's a function of a hyperventilatory pattern, or if there's congestion and therefore the air passages are smaller. And the congestion could be, there we go, I'm answering the question now. So yeah, it can be normal. So if there's an infection or, which is normal, if there's an infection and there's mucus in there or something like that, and the air is struggling to get through, that's going to most likely lead to a noisy breathing pattern. Mm-hmm. But if the noisy breathing pattern is there all of the time in the absence of infection, it is a sign that there's perhaps some degree of dysfunction happening, which could be a function of not being able to set up an ideal swallowing and breathing pattern as a neonate, or not. So yeah, hard one to answer, but yeah. basically normal breathing should be nasal, should be not particularly dramatic. You know, particularly see a deal of movement in an infant. We will see movement, of course. I hope that answers the question. It was a bit of a roundabout way of answering
it. No, it does. And you know, because I'm just trying to help mamas if they have questions around, you know, the feeding, the swallowing, because, you know, we don't know how to assess swallowing patterns. So, like, you know, how do you know it's normal? Right? So, I mean, I think that, do you want to try to answer that?
Well, the first thing is if you suspect any of these sorts of things, it would be ideally to an IBCLC, so International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. Mm-hmm. They would be the best person to assess that. So it is hard to sort of self-diagnose these mm-hmm. things. But essentially, we shouldn't see a great deal of a huge amount of movement of the lips and cheeks when we swallow. And that goes for all ages. So when we look at adults, we'll see these sorts of patterns. And usually they've either had orthodontics or they've had some teeth removed and so on, because they've had these swallowing patterns since they were little children.
Right.
We shouldn't see a great deal of movement. If we could look inside the mouth, we would see the tongue lifting up and sort of elevating up into the palate. So not just maybe the tip of the tongue moving, but we should be able to see an actual movement like this. And there should be a good seal, and there should be that nice rhythmical suck, swallow, breathe, suck, swallow, breathe, mm-hmm. as opposed to maybe lots of gumming and biting. These are all the symptoms that are likely to be happening when there's some kind of dysfunction, which might or might not be related to an oral restriction. Good seal, special K lips, kind of, you know, with the lips out, like you said before, suck, swallow, breathe, nice and gentle, rhythmical, comfortable, enjoyable, even, apparently.
I think that's really good, because I think a lot of moms, beyond the is my baby gaining weight, therefore getting enough, or is it painful? So those are the two things that we would really focus on. So having those other things to kind of look for can kind of help us feel more confident about doing it right. So thank you for that.
If you've got a baby that's functioning really well, then probably everything, you know, have fun, go and enjoy it, you know. And if it's got symptoms, reflux, colic, all these other things that can be related to these problems, then good to get that checked out rather than reaching straight for the medication drawer and maybe mm-hmm. medicating, you know. It's good mm-hmm. to have a proper assessment done by someone who's qualified first. Yeah.
How can you explain how reflux is associated with some of the dysfunction from feeding and swallowing? Did I lose you?
Yeah. So if we swallow, can you hear me?
Yeah, I've got you now.
We're good. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So how is reflux associated? Well, if we swallow air during feeding, that's medically known as aerophagia. If we take in air during feeding, whether we're a child, an adult, or a baby, that's going to lead to some degree of gassiness and wind. Because we know this ourselves. If we rush too much when we're eating our lunch or our dinner, and we're taking in a heap of air while we're eating, we get indigestion.
Yeah.
And so essentially we don't want to be taking in a heap of air during feeding. And if you're a little baby who's really struggling to feed and perhaps has oral restrictions, and has learned that the only way that you actually have the stamina to be able to get enough nutrition in is just to just power your way through that feed and guzzle like crazy.
Yeah.
Then you're probably going to take in a lot of air, especially if you haven't got a good seal anyway, because of the oral restriction. Mm-hmm. That air's got to go somewhere, and quite often once it's gone down into the stomach, it'll come back out again, and it comes back out with stomach acids and so on. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit more to it as well, in that if there is severe breathing dysfunction, mm-hmm. Like a habitual mouth breathing pattern happening, mm-hmm. that has an effect on our ability to oxygenate our cells properly,
yeah.
and smooth muscle in the body, which surrounds all cavities. needs good oxygen. Well, all cells need oxygen, but when smooth muscle doesn't get oxygenated properly, like the sphincters around our by our stomach, from the esophagus to the stomach, potentially that might have some dysfunctioning. It might spasm a little bit, possibly. I don't know whether that's been proven, but that's another theory with respect to breathing dysfunction.
No, it makes a lot of sense.
We need to create a seal and feed properly.
It's all related. So, I appreciate all of that. So unbelievably, we are already at 30 minutes here. So I would love to I know, thank you for being here. I know that you have something to offer our audience so they can come back and get to know you and your area of expertise a bit more. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So there's two things. One is that I have a four-part series of pre-recorded webinars on my website, which is drdanhanson.com. I believe Wendy will share the link with you to the sort of secret page where you can get the part one of those four webinars for free, which basically describes a lot more about breathing dysfunction, a few of the things I've been talking about just now. So hope you enjoy that. Merry Christmas with that one, and hope you enjoy watching it. And then through the Tung Tai Institute, we're actually in the process of just finalizing some webinars which have been done by one of the lactation consultants that we work with respect to the role of the lactation consultant with feeding and sweat, setting up proper swallowing patterns and so on as an infant. So when that's out, I think Wendy's going to send that around all of you guys so that you have access to those webinars.
Stay tuned for that. That'll be in 2018. So unlike a lot of the other things that you'll see, you know, because this summit is actually ending on December 31st, but this particular thing I will be sending forward to you because I believe that it's just so incredibly invaluable for all of you. So thank you, Dan, for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It's a privilege and an honor. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, it was really fun. And I think a lot of this information is going to help a lot of mamas and babies out there. So I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, you guys. So that wraps up another day of More Than Milestones. So go have a beautiful day, have lots of fun, and we will see you again tomorrow. Okay. Bye, everyone.